Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast, Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. It's episode 4070.
Said, I got some songs for you. There's one about a dirt road I really think you ought to do. So I gave it a listen, and it wasn't all that bad. But it ain't me, so I shook my head, and that's all there is to that. I don't have standards. Tell me, how can I sell out if I barely sell at all? You won't see my name on the billboard, but every night I pack the dance floor. There's your answer. I don't have hits. I've got standards.
It's Leaning Toward Wisdom. It is episode 4070. I don't have hits. I have standards.
We just need one big hit, and the rest will be history. If we could find a way to compromise, you could be the next big star. I said, man, you might be right, but I don't care if you are. Don't have hits. I've got standards. Tell me, how can I sell out if I barely sell it all? You won't see my name on the billboard. Every night I pack the dance floor. There's your answer. I don't have hits. I've got standards.
Randy Rogers and Wade Bowen from an April 2015 record. Hold My Beer, Volume 1. No, don't hold my beer. I'm not a drinker. I'm a teetotaler. I do not advise that you drink. You may, but no, I don't approve and I don't drink. But that is the name of the record. The name of the song is Standards, and the lyric obviously serves as the title for today's show. I don't have hits. I have standards. Hey, welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast. It's also the name of the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. You can go over there and you can plug in the number 4070, and it will take you to the show notes if you care to read. I realize lots of you never even visit the website. You just via Stitcher or iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast catcher is, that's how you consume the content. That's perfectly okay. It's entirely up to you. It's a great thing about this medium. But I'm glad that you're here. And, I mostly talk about topics that seem to crop up in my everyday life, either professionally or personally or sometimes both. And every now and again, somebody will say to me, have you been lurking around my house? And it's like, you know, you must have a webcam access to my house or something. You know, it happens. Occasionally I will speak about something and it just really hits home for people, quite literally. And no, I don't have spies lurking in the bushes of your house. I don't have access to your webcams. It is just that we all have the same problem sometimes, and we have the same issues, and there's a lot of things that connect us because we're all just people, and the human condition being what it is. I think it's why we sometimes find a comic, you know, who resonates with us. They'll talk about relatable things, stuff that we get, stuff that we understand. It helps if they see that stuff, if they see those problems the way that we see them. And I think that's why there are a number of successful comics with varied styles and varied personalities and varied approaches. We may have some common experiences and challenges, but the way we view the world, it can be very, very different. Back in the spring when I first heard this song that serves as the title of today's show, I laughed. I laughed out loud because it immediately struck me as being true. And I'm not a songwriter. I'm not a musician. But I know that Wade Bowen, he's the lyricist, he wrote it about the music business, but it still resonated with me, a guy who's not at all in the music business. I'm interested, but I'm not in it. And so Randy Rogers and Wade Bowen, they are longtime members of what around here is called Red Dirt Music. Now, I was born in Ada, Oklahoma, long before Blake Shelton came around. I know what the red dirt of Oklahoma looks like, and I know how it'll stain your clothes when you go outside to play. And it's red. The soil is red because there's a high concentration of iron in it. It's red clay, really. And not even Tide will get the stains out of your clothes. Red dirt music isn't so much, I don't think it's so much a sound as it is maybe an attitude. Yeah, it's different than that Nashville sound. Even for a music guy, a music appreciation guy like me, it can be hard to put your finger on, but you know it when you hear it. I mean, that song that you just heard is really it. It's part swing, it's part alt country, it's part folk, it's part Americana. The word that I've always used to describe it, whether this is accurate or not, I don't know, but it's what came to my mind many years ago when I first heard the term red dirt music. It's troubadourish. Troubadourish. You know, it's music that lives right here in this Oklahoma, Texas area. I think specifically people consider it from like Stillwater, Oklahoma, down to Waco, Texas. Luke Bryan and these other rock stars out of Nashville, they make their living and their hits singing country music anthems. That's not the spirit of red dirt music. I don't know if red dirt music has an anthem. I mean, to me, red dirt music is appealing because of the stories and maybe more importantly, the point of the stories. You know, it's not just another beer drinking, pickup truck driving, break my heart kind of music. Red dirt music isn't anthem music that's designed to rile up stadiums full of people. Red dirt music, red dirt music doesn't likely have the Jimmy Buffett factor that so many country artists are really working feverishly to emulate. Jimmy's had it going on for a lot of years, but he figured it out from very humble beginnings, busking on the streets of New Orleans. And if you go back and if you listen to episode 4040 of Leaning Toward Wisdom was entitled A Key to Success, Who Wants to Be There More Than Anybody Else? And I talked about Jimmy's humble beginnings and seeing Jimmy 40 years ago when he was starting out. As a podcaster, I can understand and I can relate to the audience part of all this. Singers, songwriters, musicians, they want more people to hear their work, hear their stuff. They want a bigger stage. Some, I'm sure, want the fame worse than others. Some want the money more than others. But how do you separate the largeness of the stage from the stuff that goes with it, the stuff that accompanies it? I mean, I don't know that you can. If you have a hit, your standards just might change. And in fact, you yourself just might change.
We'll be right back.
I know you think it's the Eagles, but it's not. It's Joe Walsh. It's from a 1978 record that's still one of my favorite records of all time. $9.42. There's an odd price point for you, currently at iTunes. But seriously, folks, is the name of the record. The name of the song is Life's Been Good. Everybody's so different. I haven't changed. Thankfully, Joe Walsh today is he's a sober Joe Walsh. Was not the case in 1978 when he recorded this. As he sang, it's hard to leave when you can't find the door. Thankfully, these days, Joe is finding the door and is doing much better. And, of course, he went on to join the Eagles, and the rest is musical history. He still has a great solo career, and he's still one of the better guitarists of his time, which is saying something because he's in grand company. He was on that program that I've talked about before with Daryl Hall. He goes to Daryl Hall's house, and that's a good episode. You need to find that online somewhere. But Joe's, you know, what Joe sings is absolutely, positively true. You think that you're not changing, everybody else has changed. I don't know. I really don't know if the money, the fame, whatever else goes along with having a hit, whatever a hit looks like in your occupation or in your field of endeavor, I don't know that you can separate it all. You can't have the good without the bad. I mean, one of the things that Rodgers and Bowen sing in that song is they sing about the fact that, you know, we've got to sing these songs when we get up in front of a crowd. And there's a rub. And maybe you're like me. You go see a band, even if you go see like the Eagles, and you go see Joe Walsh, and he recorded that song in 1978, and I went to see the Eagles. This has been a number of years ago, but even then it was well past 1978. And you realize how many times Joe Walsh has sung that song and performed that song live. It's a classic case of that be careful what you wish for, because if it is a hit and you have to play it over and over and over, you really better love it. You really better love it. How can I sell out when I barely sell at all? Funny. It's a funny line. It's a good question, too. Now, Randy Rogers and Wade Bowen, like so many other musicians, they have been subjected to criticism of selling out. Now, you've likely never heard of them, but around here in these circles, some people have argued that they're selling out, and that's what makes the line so stinking brilliant. You know, I mean, how can you sell out when you're barely selling anything at all? I could argue that Jimmy Buffett, he sold out a long time ago, but I don't see it like that. I really don't. Not when it comes to these guys, and not even when it comes to Jimmy Buffett. I'm not even sure about that whole idea of selling out. I know how people mean it. I just wonder if that really is what's going on. Rogers, Bowen, Buffett, Joe Walsh. I mean, so many other musicians, they have a genuine talent and a skill. And we encounter them somewhere along the way. I encountered Joe Walsh very early on. I was there early with Jimmy Buffett. It was over 40 years ago. And that affects my viewpoint of him, of Jimmy Buffett, of his music, and of the changes that I've seen along the way. I fell in love with that early Jimmy Buffett music. And so that gave me, and it still gives me, a bias that I have today. I don't know of a way to prevent that, and I'm not even trying to prevent it. Because Jimmy at his best, for me, is still the troubadour standing on a stage with an acoustic guitar, a buddy standing alongside him playing another acoustic guitar and singing harmony. He's still in my ears and he is still in my memory singing 3-minute stories of a man who went to Paris looking for answers.
He went to Paris looking for answers to questions that bothered him so. He was impressive, young and aggressive, saving the world on his own. But the warm summer breezes, the French wines and cheeses put his ambition at bay. Summers and winters scattered like splinters in 4 or 5 years slipped away. He went to England, played the piano, and married an actress named Kim. They had a fine life, she was a good wife, and bore him a young son named Jim. All of the answers and all of the questions locked in his attic one day. 'Cause he liked quiet, clean country living, and 20 more years slipped away. The war took his baby, the bombs killed his lady, and left him with only one eye. His body was battered, his whole world was shattered, and all he could do was just cry. While the tears were falling, he was recalling answers he never found. So he hopped on a freighter, skidded the ocean, and left England without a sound. Now he lives in the islands, fishes the pilings, drinks his green label each day, writing his memoirs, losing his hearing, but he don't care what most people say. 86 years of perpetual motion. If he likes you, he'll smile and he'll say, Jimmy, some of it's magic, some of it's tragic, but I had a good life all the way. He went to Paris looking for answers to questions that bothered him so.
1973, Jimmy Buffett. The record, a white sport coat and a pink crustacean. The name of the song is He Went to Paris. You just heard a 3-minute story. Did Jimmy sell out? I rather think he figured it out. I could argue that millions more people have heard him sing the songs I fell in love with, including that song, because he's willing to sing about cheeseburgers. I love cheeseburgers, but I hate that song. I mean, did Jimmy figure out how to earn a handsome living singing songs that connected with millions of people so he could sing what he wants? Or did he just start making music that would sell and find outrageous success? I don't know, and I don't care. I know that Jimmy has been making music and money for a long, long time, for a lot of years. He's been making a lot of money for a lot longer than he didn't make money. And if success is making a living doing what you want, well, I'm guessing that Jimmy fits that bill to a T. Writing and playing music, writing books, telling stories, that's what Jimmy does. And just because I don't love all of the stories doesn't mean that he sold out. Maybe he did. Maybe he didn't. But if he did, he has certainly figured out how to sell out well. He's not barely selling at all. No, go big or go home. And Jimmy's been going big for a long, long time. And he doesn't, at least to me, he doesn't appear to be showing any signs of slowing down. I mean, man, live, before he's done, he's going to own all of Key West. Good for him. Good for him. Jimmy's got hits. And he's been raising his standards of living for a long, long time. When he got started, Jimmy didn't have the measurements of our current world. Busking on the streets of New Orleans and other Gulf Coast cities, the kid from Mobile, you know, he really just had one standard of measurement, I'm assuming, and that was to just earn enough money to get through the day, to get through the night. Can you garner enough attention to get people to drop some money into a guitar case so you can keep doing this for another day? It was a more binary time of life for Jimmy Buffett. No savings account, no checking account, just a pocket with enough cash to confirm an idea, a love affair with music. In a recent interview, John Mayer, he acknowledged that the world is very different today, and he is a self-confessed egomaniac who battles it. I guess you would say he is hoping to be a recovering egomaniac. But he mentioned a whole new measurement that is used by musicians. But I would tell you it's not just restricted to musicians.
You once said you abused the ability to express yourself.
Oh, yeah.
What's different now?
Oh, I know what I want. I don't care if this video gets 500,000 views or 50,000 views or 5,000 views. I'm not out to affect that anymore.
That's for me to care.
That's for you to care about, man.
Are you susceptible yourself to wanting the Twitter feedback?
Yeah.
Wanting the approval?
Yeah, that's why I pull myself off of it again. I'm a recovered ego addict, and the only way that I can be sure that I don't relapse is to admit that I constantly have this ego addiction every day. So I do the Grammys and I go home, because if I stayed, I'd get high again. And then I'd get high and then I'd get low.
High on the approval.
Yeah, well, yeah. You've already looked through Twitter. Everybody goes, it's great. And then you're low again because you can't stop looking. Or you get low because you read the one negative thing. So I'm a recovered ego addict. Like, this is not the first outfit I put on today. I'm admitting that because that's my AA for being an egomaniac.
Are you going to check Twitter after this interview?
I will not check Twitter, but I checked the mirror, the original Twitter. The mirror. I checked my mentions in the glass.
How has this changed since you broke? There's new technology now.
Yeah.
There's instant feedback now.
Right. The technology that I think I'm confident enough to say is hurting music is that musicians are very self-conscious now. They're very self-aware. I see people sing and I go, they're hoping they do okay. And they're going to find out if they do okay.
They're looking for the feedback.
They're singing whilst judging. They're performing for the Twitter mentions. They're just hoping that when they get in the car on the way to dinner, their face is lit up and they're checking to see if they did okay.
They're performing for Twitter mentions. And he's right. He's completely right. In fact, just this week, Live Aid, you may not even be old enough to remember, but Live Aid was a Bob Geldof produced 16-hour live from multiple stages around the world concert done to combat hunger. And it was called Live Aid. And just this week was the 30th anniversary. U2 was one of the performing bands, along with Led Zeppelin. And I mean, it was a who's who that performed, but there was a number of things have been written and said this week about U2 and their performance, and that it just was not a good performance. Bono, there's talk that he was inebriated. The band was, they were anything but tight, and yet it was a performance that catapulted them, because their awareness was, man, that did not go well at all. But the fans loved it. The crowd loved it. So there's that awareness part. Podcasters, writers, salespeople, coders, business people, educate. It doesn't matter who we are or what we're doing. We're all in the same boat to greater or lesser degrees. We're chasing popularity. We're clamoring for our place in the modern freak show. Well, I got news for you. Bruce Jenner has raised the stakes. He's going to be tough to beat. It reminds me of a comedian back in the 70s, a guy named Franklin Ajai, and he did a bit in the 70s about serial killers.
I've been doing a lot of studying the psychopaths. I've noticed that each year there is one psychopath whose actions are far and above the rest of the psychopaths of that year, you know? Like in 76 and 77, you had the Zodiac, you know, and last year you had Son of Sam, right? You know, he's going to go into the Psychopaths Hall of Fame. And this year, got that cat in Chicago who buried 35 people underneath his house, you know? He's going to be tough to beat. You know? He's going to be real tough.
And you don't have to be a psychopath, and you don't have to be a serial killer to be tough to beat, because welcome to the modern culture. It's a freak show, and we've lost our collective minds. I mean, no wonder wisdom is so tough to come by, huh? Because the freak show just keeps getting freakier, and the attention is really tough to come by when outlandish trumps remarkable. Yeah, you know it's true. Going to be tough to beat. Every year there's some freak show that makes it tough to beat and just raises the bar for freakiness. The ironic thing is that John Mayer's apparent girlfriend, I guess they're still an item, Katy Perry, she is now the top Twitter personality with over 72 million followers. The Biebs, Justin Bieber, he's next with over 65 million. I mean, what do we do now? Man, I mean, we've lost 5 Twitter followers. Our downloads, they're not going up anymore. Oh, my lands, what are we going to do? Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to fail. That's what we're going to do. We're going to join the ranks of the millions. No, check that. The billions of losers. And we're going to be sad about it. No, we're going to be upset about it. We're going to be angry. We're going to be livid. We're going to be resentful. No, I tell you what we're going to do is we're going to be bitter. Yeah, bitterness. That's the spirit of failure, bitterness. No, I'm being snarky. We're not going to do any of that. And we're not going to do any of that, not because it's improper, which is true, but because it puts us in a herd with other losers. And so how does that help? It doesn't help. If we can't join the ranks of the popular people, then we must avoid the sea of irrelevant people. And so we're stuck with this question that is posed by Wade Bowen's lyric, how can I sell out when I barely sell at all? I want to sell out, right? I want Twitter followers. I want Facebook likes more. I want more. It's what we all say. It's what we all think to various degrees. There is a generation gap. There always has been. I grew up as a baby boomer, the tail end of it. And that just means that my grandparents, they endured the Great Depression. No, not the one from 2008, the one back in the 30s, the 1930s. And it means that my dad was part of what Tom Brokaw calls the greatest generation, those men who were in World War II. They were insistent on job security, a nice house in the burbs, good schools, mom staying at home with the kids. My generation came along and wanted more, mostly materially. And it wasn't because my parents' generation didn't have. They did have. They had far better than their parents had. And my generation wanted to keep that up, you know, keep trumping mom and dad. And women, they wanted to be like men in the 60s and the 70s. Be careful what you wish for. Wish granted. Welcome to the crapola of making a living. Women went to work outside the home, and men loved it because, well, we got tired of looking at each other at work, and we mostly wanted bigger houses, swimming pools, fancier cars, nicer vacations. Dual incomes at home made that possible. Did we sell out? Yeah, you bet. For just as much money as we could. And we were unapologetic about it as well. Standards? Well, shoot. We were searching for hits, man. Who's got time or money for standards? We're busy trying to be successful. And can't you see how busy we are?
Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that.
No, we ain't got time for that. I mean, come on, we're working hard here. Reminds me of that classic line from James Garner. My favorite, two of my favorite movies, and of course I love James Garner. There's another Okie, by the way. Well, he grew up on the West Coast, but Oklahoma claims him because he was born in Norman. But he was in two movies, Support Your Local Gunfighter and Support Your Local Sheriff. Well, there was a line in Support Your Local Gunfighter that I just, as I was preparing today's show, it just leapt to mind of being unapologetic. You know, we were searching for hits. We weren't apologetic about it. We were chasing money. It was what it was. But there's this terrific line that you must hear from James Garner and Support Your Local Gunfighter.
Morning. You buying yourself a new hat?
No, the lady's buying him one. She...
Is it going to make or break your day if I do or don't buy a hat, stranger?
Oh, no, I don't want to be a stranger to you. My name's Colorado. Colorado McGee.
Well, you said that sounds like you expected I should have heard of you. Well, I never have, so what do you want?
I want to know if you're as fast as they say you are, Swifty.
What'd you call me?
Swifty. Well, I'll call you Mr. Morgan if you like. And I'm going outside in that street and wait for you to come out. And if you don't, me and everybody else in town's going to call you a yellow dog.
Gunfight?
You catch on.
Well, you just go on out there. I'll be out on the count of ten.
You hit that fellow from behind.
Just as hard as I could.
And that's what I call owning it. Garner's character, he owned it. He wasn't Swifty Morgan. He wasn't the gunfighter that everybody thought he was. So, yeah, he clobbered the guy in the back of the head as the guy was walking away from him. Just as hard as he could. We may as well own it, too. Come on, we're working hard to be noticed. We're working to gain some popularity. We want more downloads. We want more Twitter followers. We need more retweets. We need Facebook likes. But you do know what really matters, don't you? Yeah, you do. And you know I'm going to have a song that's going to illustrate it. He's Randy Newman. You notice the guitar. It's a familiar guitarist lick. Mark Knopfler plays guitar on the tune. It's Randy Newman's 1988 song. It's Money That Matters, and it's from his album, Land of Dreams. And it's a great record. I'm one of those guys, if Randy Newman makes it, I buy it. You should buy this record. It's available at iTunes and all the places where great music is sold. Money that matters. Hits mean money. Standards mean nothing. We can sit at home with our standards and starve, or we can produce hits and we can be somebody. Ah, come on. Is it that cut and dried? Do we have to compromise our standards to be successful? Of course not. Of course not. It might help. I mean, all you got to do is ask that doctor who, was it last week? It was just here recently. There was some doctor, he was falsely diagnosing people with cancer so he could commit Medicaid fraud. Earned almost $35 million. Yeah, there's a man who gave up his, did he have morals at any point in his life? I don't know. But if he did, he gave them up. Gave up his morals, gave up his standards. It paid off. Till he got caught. But abandoning standards doesn't have to result in criminal behavior. I mean, it just might mean that we're deceptive. Not long ago, I was watching on the National Geographic Channel. They aired a documentary called Generation YouTube. I'm putting a link in the show notes. You really should watch this. It's fascinating stuff. If you have any interest at all in new media, watch it. There's a link in the show notes. Just go to leaningtowardwisdom.com, plug in the number 4070 in that search box, and it'll take you to the show notes, and there's a link called Generation YouTube. If you don't believe that things are sometimes not what they seem, if you don't think that there is this shell game that goes on in life, then you need to watch that documentary. You will be convinced. Sometimes hits happen because you don't have standards, but okay, I admit it, I'm a cynic. And even I'm not cynical enough to believe that the rules of the world are so rigid to prevent people from doing things the right way and succeeding in spite of it or because of it. But I also know that, yes, things can be contrived, just like that documentary Generation YouTube points out. And there's that other idea. There's that other idea that standards outlive hits. Now, that's something that I know is true. Ray Charles first recorded the song Georgia on My Mind in 1960. The song, written by Hoagy Carmichael, he did the music, and a guy named Stuart Gorel did the lyrics. That song was already 30 years old when Ray recorded it. 30 years old. And here we are today in 2015, 85 years after the song was written, and today, and for a lot of years now, the song, it's a standard. It's a standard. It's been a hit. But over the years, it has morphed into something more powerful. It has morphed into a standard. And depending on your age, you probably can't tell me what song is number one on Apple iTunes right now. I had to go look it up. It's Can't Feel My Face by The Weeknd. Can't Feel My Face. No, I listen to it. I'm not a fan. Well, that's not entirely true. I do kind of love the title, Can't Feel My Face. It's a Michael Jackson starter kit kind of a song. And it's also the only song on that record, which, by the way, is not due to be released until August the 28th, 2015. It's the only song, at least according to what is shown at iTunes, that doesn't have explicit lyrics. 14 proposed tracks, and this is the one track that doesn't have explicit lyrics. Hello, 2015. I've got hits. I don't have standards. Well, listen, we all know Georgia on My Mind. You know Georgia on My Mind. You could hum a few bars. It's been many, many, many years since it was on the charts. Well, it doesn't matter. Chart position doesn't matter when you're a standard. I own four versions of that song. I own the original by Ray Charles, done in 1960. I own a 2002 version by Van Morrison. I own a 2009 version by Michael Bublé. I mean, come on, when you're a standard, in this case a song, you get covered by a variety of people. Willie Nelson, he had a hit from it in 1978. That's the fourth version that I own. So maybe it begs the question, well, which came first, the hit or the standard? Well, the song was first a hit. Had Georgia On My Mind never been a hit, I could argue it probably would not be a standard. But we're using hit and standard metaphorically. A hit is success, mostly financial. Okay, sure. We want more readers, we want more listeners, we want more followers, but what we really want is what Randy Newman's saying. We want more money. We want financial rewards that come from popularity. That doesn't mean that we want to be a celebrity. Maybe we just want a bigger, better job. We want somebody to want us more so we can make more. Or we're a business and we want more clients, we want more customers. Or maybe we're a creative and we want a bigger audience. In the end, we want the money. We want the money that comes with a bigger version of success than what we currently enjoy. Nothing wrong with that. A standard is our commitment to our beliefs, our convictions, our preferences. It's what we would most want if we could have our cake and eat it too. And when I first heard Rodgers and Bowen sing that song, I thought of how easy it is to see the world through skeptical and cynical eyes and how hard it is to believe, and I mean really believe, that you can succeed by being true to who you are, what you are, and how you choose to go about things. Can you be genuine? Can you be real? Can you be true to who you really are? Or do you have to put on a front? You have to pretend to be somebody that you're not. I'm a red dirt guy. I have lived my entire life in Oklahoma, Texas, and Louisiana. Now, well, there's no red dirt that I know of in Louisiana, but it's still this neck of the woods. There's in this part of the country, there's just a demeanor. There's a way of life that is particular to this part of the country. I'm sure that that's true wherever you are in America or wherever you are in the world. I'm sure that your neck of the woods, wherever that is, I'm sure that there's some personality that's unique to where you are. Food, music, just a general way that people behave, a general way that people speak. When you venture beyond this area, when you venture beyond Oklahoma, Texas, and Louisiana, it changes. Now, sometimes it changes just ever so slightly, and sometimes it can change wildly. You can drive to the east to Arkansas, and it's not so different. You can venture up into Tennessee or Missouri. It's not so different. It's not the same, but it's not so different. You can go toward Colorado or New Mexico, Arizona, and it's very different. You can meander your way up to Indiana or Illinois, and it's very different. You can go to either coast, the east or the west. Well, you've left the planet. You're not even in the same galaxy as this part of the country. It's a standard. Not in the sense of being right versus wrong, but it's a standard in the sense that it's what I'm used to. It's comfortable. I like it. I belong here. The hit, geographically, it might be somewhere other than here. Might be New York City. Might be Los Angeles. Might be Chicago. Might be Miami. I'm not interested in the hit because the standard means too much to me. Here is where my family is. It's here where my work is. It's here where my church work is. This is home. I've got standards geographically. Not everybody does. I know some people who they go where the work takes them or where the current itch beckons. I've known people who sold everything they had, left grown kids, left grandkids behind, and moved to a tropical climate somewhere to enjoy retirement. I don't judge those people, but I have to confess to you, I don't understand it. I can't possibly relate to it. They're willing to chase the hit because they don't have standards when it comes to a place. Well, good for them. But it applies to so much more. The songwriters are playing red dirt music. Rodgers and Bowen are playing red dirt music. They're committed to it. They're not Nashville guys. They're Texans. But, you know, this isn't a Nashville versus Waco, Texas challenge. It's not a red dirt music versus modern country music challenge. Well, not entirely. I mean, how can it be? How can it be when Nashville has the likes of Jason Isbell and Sturgill Simpson? But Nashville also has Matt Carney and Midnight Pilot. Nashville is diverse, and so is Texas. So that ain't it. It's the stereotypes, and every industry has them. Every walk of life has them. Hollywood and the movie industry have them. Television in New York City have them. Publishing, probably in New York City, have them. Wall Street has them. These Texas songwriters and singers, they understand it. They want hits. Of course they want hits. They just don't want to sing Luke Bryan kind of music to get hits. And why should they? We've got Luke Bryan. We got Blake Shelton. I think Blake Shelton's a terrific personality. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the music necessarily. Nashville's got all these super popular country music stars that produce hits and win awards. I mean, do we need more of the same? Doesn't really matter, because we're going to get more of the same, because that's how the hit machine works. We see what succeeds and we work to replicate it. That's why we don't see more innovation. All you've got to do is look at the podcasting space, and podcasters are clamoring to chase the people that are popular in podcasting. Bloggers have historically done the same thing. Authors have done the same thing. Musicians have done the same thing. Photography, it doesn't matter. Builders of cars have done the same thing. Why do you think that it's so difficult to discern between a Hyundai and a Honda anymore? They're all reading each other's mail. They're stealing ideas. Somebody succeeds, let's do what they're doing. Enter Jason and Sturgill. They're not replicating the current hit machine formula coming out of Nashville or any other music town. Jason is just plain different with pretty awesome songwriting chops. Sturgill Simpson, man, he's old school. He is singing just like a guy from a bygone era. I mean, sometimes you can be a freak without being too freakish. Just unique. Just different. Unique enough to be attractive. And there's the paradox. You can be part of the establishment once you break through, like Luke or Blake. They both struggled at first. You can be Justin Bieber, and you can have a promoter extraordinaire like Scooter Braun help launch you out of YouTube celebrity to real world fame and fortune. You can be one of many attractive young ladies who can sing well enough, especially with some electronic help and a tuner, to earn millions of dollars. But don't misunderstand, being part of the hit machine is no small feat. I mean, for us to just throw rocks at these people and say, well, come on, bunch of no-talent hacks, it's crazy hard. It's crazy hard to be part of the hit machine. It's crazy hard when you have to battle the countless millions of people who will do anything, literally anything, to make it. And it's also tough to make it on your own terms by refusing to be like everybody else. You can battle the odds of trying to be unique because it's just how you roll. Jake Bug, with two G's. Jake Bug is a young man in the UK. Started playing guitar when he was 12. By the time he was 17, he had a record deal. He's 21 years old now. 21. He's an old dude now. He's got 3 hit records. Not songs, records. 2 LPs and an EP. Okay, wasn't that hard for him, really? Because he's different.
I drink to remember, I smoke to forget. Some things to be proud of, some stuff to regret. Gone down some dark alleys in my own head. Something's changing, changing, changing. I go back to Clifton to see my old friends. The best people I could ever have met. Skin up a fat one, hide from the feds. And something's changing, changing, changing. So I kiss goodbye to every little ounce of pain.
That's from his 2013 record, just called Jake Bug. It's from his first record. Probably one of the bigger hits on that record. That along with a song called Lightning Bolt. This song's called Two Fingers. Yeah, we'll let your imagination go wild, shall we? It's different, right? I mean, you and I both know how different doesn't always work out, though. And in Jake Bug's case, it did work out. He's really different. His music does not sound like anything you've quite heard. Doesn't always work out that way. Not in music, not business, or anything else. I mean, sometimes different just gets ignored. Well, Jake Bug came out, and he was not ignored. It's just too easy to focus on joining the ranks and claim, you know, well, our lack of success is because we're not willing to do what they're willing to do. We're unwilling to do it the way they're doing it. So we want to be high-minded and conclude that our lack of success is because of that. It's this high road sensibility. But it may not be true. That's my argument. I mean, because remember, not everything is as it appears. I'm telling you, go watch that Generation YouTube documentary. It'll absolutely positively convince you and show you how contrived things can be. It's very worthwhile. It's a good show. Shepard Fairey is an artist. He turned himself into the Detroit police just today, in fact, after a warrant was issued for his arrest. He's an artist. He paints these really large murals in cities. And he also does illegal tag art. You know, seems he has illegally tagged 9 buildings in Detroit, doing about $9,000 worth of damage. Pardon me if I'm skeptical. The man is worth millions and millions of dollars. He did that Hope poster for President Obama. This is not just some street punk artist. $9,000 worth of damage done in street art. Tagging is a really small price to pay for another hit. And besides, he can afford great legal representation. He's already been released, according to news reports, $7,500 bond. I'm betting that he's going to parlay this little legal issue into many more millions of dollars. I'm also betting that the entire thing was architected, contrived. Well played. That's what I have to say. Well played, sir, because, you know, we're living in a day and age where everybody's famous.
Everybody's famous. Everybody's free. Everybody's broken heart is shining like a new TV. On the walls of a dark room where the world used to be. Everybody's famous. Everybody's free. There's a fire in the windrows. There's a wolf out in the corn. There's a wildness waiting for the moment to be reborn. And your life is just a ticket, and it's waiting to be torn. Everybody's famous, but everything is gone.
This record has been in my ears for, I don't know, for a while. I get on these binge listening habits with records, and this has been my latest binge. His name is Jeffrey Foucault, Foucault. It's a 2011 record. You can buy it for $9.99 at iTunes. The name of the record is Horse Latitudes, and the name of the song is Everybody's Famous. And we're living in that day and age. If we're not famous, we want to be. And I don't know. There's the rub.
Saw your billboard in the rain. They heard your mama crying, and you forgot your own real name. And she voted for your heartbreak, and she smiled at your shame. Everybody's famous, everyone's the same. Everybody's famous, everybody's free. The kingdom of heaven is inside of me. I wanna kick the lights out, I know there's something left to be. But everybody's famous,
and that brings us to our ability or our willingness to play the game. Can you have hits and still have standards? Of course you can. Can your standards make it harder to have hits? Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. You got to do what you got to do. Me, I got to live here in North Central Texas because the people who matter the most to me, they're here. Because my professional and my church work, they're here. I got to chase the things that I'm chasing. Namely, I've got to chase the kind of work that I'm doing because I'm ideally suited for it. And it's where I know I can provide the most value. I've got to chase a lifestyle that fits my convictions, my faith, my family. I've got to stand by what I stand by. And I got to stand for what I stand for because that's where my commitments are. To my faith, to my family, to my work. I'm not making those decisions for you. You know, you got to do the same thing for yourself. It's that whole figuring it out ordeal that faces each one of us. I talked about it in the last episode, episode 4069, figuring it out. I'll tell you what we can't do. We can't do what works for somebody else, even if they're achieving or they're getting the hits that we want. The art of being unique is one that you have to figure out for yourself. You can be a hit with your own life, for your own family. Maybe you can be a bigger hit with more people. I mean, either way, really, it can make a person sick and tired. So you just have to be careful as you venture out to chase what you want.
Got your bag on your shoulder. Never thought once about thinking it over. Feel like you're the only one who's ever been in a bad situation. Now you need to take yourself a little vacation. 'Cause after all, what's done is done. Sick and tired. Sick and tired. Everything around you's growing old. The days drag on, nights last forever. Every day's tougher just to keep it together. Forget everything you've ever known. Except for home. Promise you couldn't keep. Bet it's not losing a bit of sleep over how you're getting down the line. Now don't you fret, now don't you worry. Well, don't get in too much of a hurry. 'Cause up ahead's that city with a sign. Sick and tired of being sick and tired. Everything around you's growing old. Yeah, the days drag on, nights last forever. Every day's tougher just to keep it together. Forget everything you ever known. Except for home. Home is where the
2004 record. The band is called Cross Canadian Ragweed. Yep, you heard it right. $9.99 over to iTunes. The name of the record is Soul Gravy. The name of the song is Sick and Tired. Yeah, I'm hoping that you have hits, and I do hope you have standards. Just remember, hits come and go, but the standards, they last. And that's it. That's episode 4070 of Leaning Toward Wisdom. I appreciate you listening, hanging with it all the way through. If you want to join the Facebook group, I would encourage you to do that. Just go click that tab over at the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. My name is Randy Cantrell. Come to you from North Central Texas, specifically Dallas-Fort Worth. Thanks for listening. And welcome inside the L Studio.
Everything around you feels brand new. Yeah, the days fly by, the nights can be longer. Every day you're just a little bit stronger. Now that you spread your wings and flown back to home.
All right, let's take you out with a female vocalist. I get in these modes where I go looking. You ever just go looking for good music? Well, I'm doing it all the time, but there are occasions where I just go looking for a good female vocalist that maybe I haven't heard from before. I have played some of this young lady's music in the past. I don't remember which episode, but I do remember that I've introduced her to you. This is from her latest record. Her name is Heather Maloney. This is from, and I think it was April of this year, April 2015, a record called Making Me Break. This is the title track from that record. You can buy this over at iTunes for $9.99. Heather Maloney. I'm always willing to just snag another good female vocalist and put them into the music collection. I can't explain why. Just, I don't really tend to do that with male artists. I just, as I come across them, but occasionally I get a hankering to add a new female vocalist to the mix, just a different kind of style. And I don't know, a different kind of clarity that you get, I think, with some female vocalists. So this is Heather Maloney, again, 2015 record. It's the title track to her new record, Making Me Break. Enjoy.
Ooh, everything is making me break. Look at how the leaves move like mice. Every time I drive through you, November, you are always making me look twice. Everything is making me break. Look at how the waves crash and fall. Every time the dam breaks, I remember what 100 years does to a wall. Made it harder to see you.